Who with it now? You're listening to the Pride of Detroit podcast called the PODcast. We call it that. That's what it is. PrideofDetroit.com for everything you need to know about the Detroit Lions, analysis, news, fun stuff, fan needs, everything like that. We're the best out there. We're under the sun. Here we are. I'm Chris Lemieux at Detroit Southern on Twitter with Alex Reno at Alex_Reno, picking fights on Twitter all day, every day. Ryan Matthews at Ryan_POD. And of course, fearless leader Jeremy Reisman at Detroit Online. Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
We're in a combative mood today, I think.
Don't nod. This isn't a visual medium.
We're ready for some football. So as long as it doesn't get canceled.
Yeah. No, we're recording this on Wednesday. Thursday, it'll be out. And Friday, Thursday night, we'll have preseason action. And Friday, we will have Lions in action for the preseason. It's here, baby.
The nine-month wait is over. Or week.
9 months.
Oh, boy.
Nine-month week.
That's a long week.
It is a real long week.
But, so... It would have been over sooner because Sunday was supposed to be the Hall of Fame game, and they, because they are the NFL, they fucked it up. They fucked it up real bad.
Yeah, and it was very bizarre how much they fucked it up. Like, I don't even remember all the details, but like any field expert or expert on how to like be a grounds crew member would not have fucked it up.
Oh,
that
man,
badly.
I should have gotten my friend Clint on this podcast. He goes to school at Texas A&M and like he knows everything about football fields. So like he would have been a great person to talk to about.
There's a whole science to it. There's like a field of field management. It's so bizarre that so basically what happened was they painted too late or it wasn't drying quick enough. So they tried to heat it up. And then heating it up melted some of the like rubber bits inside the field.
Right, because it's a turf field. It's not a grass field. So for some reason, these people decided we're going to treat this like a grass field. And like, yeah, no, that stuff is rubber down there. So have fun with that.
Right. And from what I understand is they really didn't even need to like start painting in the first place because all it was like the paint was just faded a little bit and somebody decided that they just wanted it to be looking perfect.
I guess. This was clever by half going on here, I think. So that got called off. That was kind of funny, though. And Packers, all the rest. I feel bad for the people who paid all that money to go to that game and like had to fight for refunds, though, because, you know, the NFL was like, give your money back.
Yeah, not even just that, too, is like the players that are fighting for these jobs. That's like an extra game for them.
Yeah, I think I saw a quote from like an agent who said, like, the whole reason I kind of push my clients towards the Packers, who are undrafted free agents, is because they usually get that fifth preseason game.
Yep. I saw that quote too. Yeah. And it's such a huge mess up by the league and not exactly the way you want to start off the preseason, but we got six games on Thursday and then Lions on Friday. So hopefully that'll all be quickly put behind them.
Yeah. Well, I think it already is. I think I was reading something by Ty Schalter today. Shout out to Ty. He's friend of Pride Detroit. He was writing something. He was basically saying the media response to the Hall of Fame game getting canceled was, all right, cool. We don't have to cover this back to watching guilt-free Olympics. So, yeah, the Olympics thing's probably going to make the preseason fly a little under the radar. Before we get into that, we need to clear up some stuff. Three of us, not including Jeremy. Jeremy's in Southern California, but myself, Alex, Ryan, we were all at the mock game, the simulated game at training camp last Saturday. You want to talk about it?
The Eric Ebron game.
The Eric Ebron game. We're going to get to him in a second, but why do we have to start off on the negative foot?
because that's the only big bit of news that came out of it that has that turned this website completely upside down and turned us into the Snapchat truthers.
Did you really say on the wrong foot?
I did. Okay. Look, we were having fun there. I had a, oh, now I get it. Okay. You son of a bitch. Listen, we were having fun there. I got an Army staffer jersey for completely just dumb reasons.
Yeah, tell the people how much you paid to be ironic.
No, I won't. You can Google it. Google's free. But what was it? Jay Lee had a great game. We were all talking about Jay Lee. We were all talking about Colwick. And then all of a sudden we turn around and do we still know what happened to Eric Ebron? Like some people were saying it was a cut block, but then people were like, no, it's not a cut block. Like what? I didn't even see. I was like tweeting at the time, so I didn't even see what happened to him.
I thought that either his foot got caught in like the turf or something and somebody might have fell on him or something. Is that right?
No, I mean, all we have is you know, third hand reports from someone in the fans that thought they saw something. So we don't really know. And the Lions aren't saying anything. So we won't really ever know probably what exactly happened. But, you know, I saw theories out there that he got rolled up on, that, like you said, got stuck in the turf. I've seen it all. We won't know. It's really.
Yeah, we had three of us there and none of us saw it. So we're just awesome reporting right here.
Well, I think I actually had video of it and then I deleted it. To be honest, well, because it was like a sweet play to Abdullah where he was breaking a run outside, and I think that Ebron was just going against the play, and something like Jeremy or Alex has mentioned, like there's 100 different theories as to like what actually happened to his foot, but I think it was just so messed up that the team just moved the entire practice to the other end of the field while one of their like focal points of their offense was writhing in pain on the ground.
Yeah, yeah, like, they didn't stop. Nobody's taking a knee or anything. It was
nobody took a knee. A couple of like the linemen, I think Stafford and even Caldwell, like went over there and like looked at him, and then all of a sudden it was like, blow the whistle, let's go to the other end of the field and work on our red zone offense without our. Maybe our biggest red zone threat.
Well, can we stop and just I want to be careful around this because then, you know, I know what's going to happen. Like we had some of these people commenting on it when Eric Ebron was on Snapchat later. People, I know there's a certain subset of Lions fans out there that will listen to what you just said and said, well, that's just proof the rest of the Lions don't care about him. He's a, you know, a showboat and, you know, he doesn't deserve to be on this team.
That's absurd.
I forgot this isn't a visual medium, so you can't see my eyes rolling back into my skull.
Yeah, like you got the finger on your temple there. But
I mean that's the thing. Like with anything Eric Ebron related, you have to realize whatever you say is going to get interpreted in an entirely different way. When I found him dancing on Snapchat, I didn't even think that people would be like, why? You know, did he fake the injury? Why is he being so happy? Is he happy that he's out for the year?
Why do we have Ebron truthers?
I saw that and I'm just like, wow, maybe he's not injured. And suddenly, like, this got spun 10 million different ways in how Ebron's a terrible person. And I couldn't believe it.
I screenshot that Snapchat four different times into, like, different pictures. And I, like, posted something about, like good to see him in good spirits for a guy who just got carted off the field, like, get well soon or something like that to Ebron. And then people were in my mentions like, I can't believe he's driving. I'm like, do you know how a selfie works on a camera? I was like, did you notice that the guy in the passenger seat had his right arm extended as in driving the car? I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, I can't believe that people are so out for Eric Ebron. Like,
oh, I can believe it. I absolutely can believe it. I just didn't think we'd get this far, but God, man, like some of y'all just really hate this guy. Some of y'all out there just really hate Ebron, and there's no hope for you.
You can hate that the Lions didn't pick Aaron Donald, but you can't hate Eric Ebron for not being Aaron Donald.
I mean, he looked really good in that practice, too.
Yeah, by all accounts, he's looked great, and I know that means nothing to the Ebron haters out there until he does something on the field, but you know, he had a good year last year. I don't care what anyone says. He had a good year last year for his sophomore year. I think he's going to have a great year if he can make it on the field this year. I really do.
Yeah, I'm kind of worried about the extent of the injury, even if it's not something as like just again what they like. Rappaport was the one who kind of just chummed the water by saying it was an Achilles, right?
Yeah.
Like the problem is with these insiders, if they float something like that, if a Schefter or a rap sheet out there floats that kind of thing, people will take it as gospel. And like,
well, yeah, because you had websites that were already posting that he had an Achilles injury and they were running with it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Just because Rappaport said something. So like, yeah. And I mean, we were guilty of that too. We all kind of panicked, but yeah, I think at this point it's kind of interesting, but even if it's not something as like, let's say he's just like strained his hamstring or something, like that will last with him for an entire season.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a high ankle sprain, I mean, you're not going to be 100% for a long time. Even, you know, he'll probably make it on the field, but that's exactly the sort of
his performance will be hindered. His performance will be hindered, and that will matter to the Ebron haters because they'll just see him being a bum.
Well, I mean, there's an awful lot of tape and Toradol that you can put into that ankle and make it feel just fine.
That was a remarkable report, by the way. A couple weeks ago, SB Nation, Louis Bien, he put out that article about just how much this painkiller Toradol is floating around the league. We kind of talked about it a little bit when the Calvin Johnson interview went down with E60, but he really went in deep about it. It's really good. You should really go check it out. But I think we should talk about the rest of the roster here. So, like, Ebron up in the air. So let's say the worst happens and Ebron's out. Pettigrew's on the pup and we have no clue if he's going to perform at all this year. Tim Wright's no longer with the team. Is Cole Wicks starting?
Yeah, he's got to be your number one, like, receiving tight end.
Yeah, and he didn't look that bad in practice, but still, like, oh God, like, we have a rundown here. Jeremy put it together. I'm just looking at the names we have. Cole Wick, Matthew Mulligan, Adam Feeney. I almost screwed it up already, even though you showed how to pronounce it. Adam Feeney, Orson Charles, and Ben McCord.
Yeah, it's not a great crew, guys. Cole Wick is getting a lot of kind of hype right now since Eric Ebron's out. But you really don't want to be relying on an undrafted rookie free agent to be your number one tight end.
Well, you're going to need at least number two, right?
Right. And that's where Matthew Mulligan might come in. I think he's listed ahead of Colwick on the unofficial depth chart, which came out this week. Okay, but Mulligan's more of a blocking guy. I think the Lions really are kind of at a crossroads right now. It obviously depends on how long they think Ebron's going to be out. But if he's going to be out for a long period of time, say, you know, maybe they put him on the short-term IR, they either have to go out and get a new guy, someone that can fill Ebron's role as close to as possible as Ebron does, because I don't think they have a guy that can do that right now, or they kind of have to switch offensive strategies and move away from having that tight end as a receiving threat and maybe just use Matthew Mulligan as more as a old school blocking tight end.
And Anquan Boldin isn't converting to tight end. We can just put that out there right now. He's not.
I don't think that was ever an option.
But people were talking about it, and it never was going to happen.
He's going to be playing a tight end role. That's the thing. Like,
they're two different things, though, right?
Right. Slot is very different from tight end.
Right. But I mean, it goes down to like the Jimmy Graham thing. Like, he was a slot receiver his entire career in New Orleans, but they called him a tight end. That's what Anquan Boldin is basically going to be playing.
Yeah,
right. But you still need a legitimate tight end somewhere on the field.
Well, here's the biggest problem with the Colwick Matthew Mulligan thing. Yeah, they're undrafted free agents, but the Lions get so much more predictable if they go into the season without Eric Ebron healthy and without Brandon Pettigrew healthy, because then teams can pick up on, well, if Cole Wick is in the game, he's probably going to be going downfield for a pass. If Matthew Mulligan's in the game, he's most likely staying on the line to block. Like, the Lions become more predictable, you know, rather than having somebody who's more versatile like Ebron, because don't get it twisted. I mean, like, Ebron's a great pass catch. I think he's a very good pass catching tight end. But he can also like get in there and mix it up as a blocker too. So the Lions aren't as predictable with, you know, somebody who's as versatile as him in the game as you know they would be if they had two guys who have two very distinct roles on the team, like Mulligan and Wick.
Definitely, yeah. Anything else on the Ebron front? It's anywhere between he's just going to miss a couple of preseason games to he might be out for the whole season. We just don't know right now.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like it's trending towards it's not too serious, but there's not a lot of info out there. There's this site Insider Injuries that put out, I guess they try to guesstimate how long things are going to be based on analytics and reports and stuff like that. They said a grade 2 sprain. I don't really know how much to read into that. They think he might be ready by week 1. I'm a little skeptical of that. I think it'll be a couple weeks into the season. At this point, I think he's probably out of the waters for a season-long injury. I mean, he's traveling with the team when they're going to preseason practices. If it was that serious of an injury, he'd probably, you know, be inside the Lions locker room training. And
yeah, it looks like it's trending towards sprain. Yeah, yeah.
He's walking around with no boot. He has no crutches. I mean, he hardly even has a limp. So, I mean, if the team can trust him to walk around on the field without the aid of anything, then
it just looked really bad when it happened. I think that's the scary part. Like we all saw it. He was down for a good while, and he had to get carted off and everything else. Like. That's kind of the two things we're weighing against here.
It hurts when you sprain your ankle too, though. So
that's true. That's true. Anything else we need to recap from training camp? TJ Jones, he was limping a little bit, but I don't know. Andre Caldwell, was he in a cast or a wrap or something?
Yeah. So some beat writers saw that Andre Caldwell was in a wrap or a cast. They weren't really sure which one, but he and TJ Jones, who at first we thought may have suffered a concussion, actually was limping. Both those guys really need the playing time to compete at wide receiver, which is one of the most contentious camp battles. But Andre Caldwell's probably in a lot of trouble right now to make the team. And TJ Jones, even though he was kind of considered an easy wide receiver to make the team at this point, you know, if he's not getting the reps, if he's not getting the snaps out there in the preseason, he could fall behind some other guys.
I mean, we're already kind of considering he's going to fall behind Bolden to begin with. So,
right.
Let's take a quick break here, though. I think that's all we need from training camp. We're going to recap a little bit of the Lions Steelers camp practice that's been going on right now. And then after that, we're going to talk about previewing for the preseason Steelers. It's on Friday. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the upcoming cuts and everything else. And then, of course, later on the show, we're going to get to the mailbag, which we always do. So stick around. Moving right along on the Pride of Detroit podcast, let's talk about camp practice been going on between Lions and Steelers right now. Anything that's been standing out? I haven't been paying attention. I've been working really late nights, so I've been missing some of it. So some of y'all are going to have to come in here like I'm just a baby.
I mean, the big headlining thing from day one was Darius Slay versus Antonio Brown. That was kind of what everyone was looking forward to, and it kind of paid off in that Antonio Brown kind of lit up Slay right to begin off. I think he ran three straight go routes against Slay. Kind of broke open in two of them, caught two touchdowns, I think, out of those three. But again, we did our little Snapchat investigative reporting. Gary Slay posted some of those videos on his Snapchat. I guess he gets tape of it after practice so he can kind of watch himself, see what he needs to improve on. And he kind of broke down what happened on Snapchat, and it was really interesting kind of seeing that point of view. And it was actually a lot more evenly battled than a lot of people were reporting on Twitter at the time. So that's just kind of entertaining. I don't really read much into it. I think someone on Pride of Detroit said it best. Like, the Lions have some problems and Darius Slay is not one of them. But it was still kind of fun to watch. What do you guys think about that?
I mean, even if he wasn't, if he was having some trouble, it's against Antonio Brown, one of the best receivers in the league. Like, that's right. Going to happen every now and then. There's going to be at least one play where he's just going to get beat. It's just kind of law of averages.
Right. And these are like 7-on-7 drills. And sure. More time than not, you're going to have safety help in the back anyway. So,
yeah, I don't read into it too much. I do like how we've basically created our entire like Snapchat research arm, though. This isn't something MLive has.
Well, somebody needed to corner the market. So why not we?
I feel bad that we're even talking about it, like we're letting out our trade secret or something. Like, I almost talked to you, Jeremy. You wanted to put out that social media list, and I almost was about to tell you, like, we should probably keep this for ourselves.
I thought about it, but the people need the information. That's what we're here for.
We're here to give the people what they want. Yeah.
And, you know, also, the more people that are following these guys on Snapchat, the quicker we're going to get this news, because someone will, you know, at tweet us or at tweet anyone and be like, hey, did you see what Eric Ebron just said on Instagram or whatever?
Someone will narc.
Yeah. And maybe that's a bad thing. Maybe it's a good thing. But hey, players have got to learn. Social media is a thing. I was a little nervous putting out the Slay thing today because I'm afraid the coaches are going to come at him today and be like, hey, you can't post that stuff on social media, man.
Oh, whatever. But I liked it. I was, you know, just the concept of it. But what else do we learn from there? Offensive line improvement. How is the offensive line going? We were just having a heated discussion about the other night.
Joe Dahl. We won't get into the Joe Dahl stuff yet. We might have to tackle a little later.
You know what? We have a mailbag question.
Pun intended, but we might later. He's a guard.
But just general thoughts on the offensive line. This was kind of the biggest problem for the Lions last year. And like, if the Lions are going to succeed at anything, even with getting the ball out faster from Matt Stafford's hand, which seems to be the emphasis still with the Jim Bob Cooter system and everything, like the O-line still has to improve. So what do we have there?
Well, Taylor Decker isn't sucking, according to Jim Caldwell.
Oh, that's good. That's really good.
Yeah, what was the exact quote?
I was going to say, Jeremy, like, I hope you can clean up that paraphrase that I just did.
No glaring issues.
No glaring issues from Taylor Decker.
Not exactly a ringing endorsement, but
Caldwell's been negging on a lot of these rookies too. Like he really flattened Rudock the other week.
Well, I don't know.
That's better than no comment, at least.
Yeah,
I don't even think he was ragging on him that much. He was just saying, listen. He's a sixth round rookie quarterback. This guy isn't going to come in and light the league on fire. If you watched the Hard Knocks on Tuesday, you saw that Jared Goff is going through his own struggles.
Jared Goff's going through struggles in his brain. Learning,
whether he's trying to figure out how to throw a fade pass or figure out where the sun rises, he's struggling.
He's such a goober. What was the word you used, Ryan? Goober, to describe Jared Goff?
Yeah, I think I called him a goober.
Speaking of Rudock, that was the other thing from camp. Like, we saw him. Where were the only places he's putting the ball, Ryan? It was like in the ground or in the stands.
Yeah, but then all hope was reestablished when on the very last play of the mock game he threw a touchdown pass to, I believe it was either Dwayne Washington.
It was Dwayne Washington. I remember that much. Yeah. Yeah, no, like, I just find it funny that Caldwell's kind of got that attitude about rookies, but I'm assuming it's one of those things that these coaches like to do with the rookies, so.
Yeah. But one thing I wanted to say about the offensive line, we kind of got really bad reports about them throughout the first 2 weeks of training camp, that pretty much everyone was struggling, except for Reef, who was surprisingly being pretty solid at right tackle, but they went up against the Steelers for the first time and reports were actually pretty good. I think Kyle Meinke of MLive.com gave everyone kind of rave reviews, except interestingly enough for Laken Tomlinson, who's continuing to struggle at left guard there. So I don't really know how much I want to read into one practice between the Lions and the Steelers. Part of me, the slappy part of me wants to be like, well, of course the Lions offensive line struggled against the Detroit defensive line because they've got a really impressive crew in the interior defensive line there. But part of me knows, like, let's not overreact to one practice. Just because the Lions held up pretty well against the Steelers doesn't really mean all that much in just one practice.
So I think we've kind of discussed this amongst ourselves a little bit, but I think Alex can kind of echo what I'm going to say is that, you know, going to a couple days of training camp and then also going to the mock game, it was kind of difficult to like get a read on it. I mean, it's just in general, it's just difficult to like see how well the offensive line is performing because it's like, Are they really like pulling the way that it should be? Are the guards pulling the way that they're going to be pulling in games? And like, are you going to be like seeing the kind of blocking that you need to see like in a training camp practice or in a mock game? I mean, it's kind of difficult to get a read on an offensive line in training camp.
And most of those articles from like the beat writers at first were saying that everybody was struggling because of the one-on-one drills, which is completely different than actual team drills. So you don't really know if they were struggling working together. And yeah, like Ryan said, even going to the mock game, it's pretty hard unless you have like a LaCharles Bentley next to you to give you some kind of indication of what's going on down there.
Let it go.
Well, stop it. Everybody here at Pride of Detroit apparently has problems with offensive linemen turn analysts. Let me say the name Mark Schlereth in front of you.
Mm. Eat more great green chili, you son of a...
Twitter beef everywhere, man.
Oh, God. He's not going to listen to this podcast. I don't care. Unlike Alex getting narked to LaCharles Bentley. Okay, different topic. Just what's... I guess the big thing I got to ask is what's your just take? We've seen these joint practices now. What's your kind of take on how do you feel about them?
They're fun. I don't think they're necessarily good or bad. I mean, I guess it is good if you're, like, for instance, Darius, like, going to go up against Antonio Brown, since he doesn't really have a Calvin Johnson to go up against every day anymore. It's only going to improve you, I guess.
Yeah. I think I like the joint practices just because it's a way to go against, like you said, Alex, go against maybe some different competition. And it's also a way to kind of just get like the feel for like a game. I mean, even if you are just playing like 7-on-7 or something like that, it's at least a way to like get yourself in the swing of, you know, going against guys that you're not that you've been practicing with for the past like week or maybe even the past couple of years.
It's shifting it up. It's definitely shifting it up. I know there's, of course, though, always the risk of a fight breaking out for some of these things, but.
You get in fights with your own players, ask Lakin Tomlinson.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I don't think Caldwell and Tomlin are those types of coach. Wait, is Tomlin still coaching this season?
Yes, yes. You're thinking of Coughlin, who got fired.
No, I mean, retired. I just wasn't sure if Tomlin was. Oh. Anyway, yeah.
They're not getting rid of Tomlin. He's a made man.
Those are two coaches that are like extremely disciplined, and I don't think they're going to let their guys get into a big fight.
We'll see. As long as no assistant coaches come running on the field during a play.
Yeah, like, what happens if Al Golden gets in the middle of something?
I was thinking more on the Steelers side.
Joey Porter, is he still coaching for the Steelers? I'm sure he is.
Oh, shoot, that's right.
Yeah, that's what
Jeremy was talking about. Is that it?
Yeah, do you want to preview the preseason game, Friday's game?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, let's, you know what, do you guys want to take a quick break here? We'll just do a really quick break. Come back and let's talk about the preseason game. All right, preseason game one, Steelers Lions. We're not going to do too many previews, I think. On podcasts when we hit the main season itself, I'm much more interested in trying to review action than I am previewing. Plus, if you listen to the podcast late, then a preview doesn't do you any good either, right? But because we are just in the middle of this offseason still, and we're trying to kill time until we get to football that counts on the scoreboard, we need to talk about this. So already the big news of today, of Wednesday, is that there's going to be quite a few top line Steelers who are just completely sitting out the game. Ben Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, although Bell is a little more anticipated because of the suspension.
I don't know. To me, like, this guy isn't going to be playing in the regular season. Why not get him some reps in the preseason? That was surprising to me.
I'm sure that probably just doesn't look good for whatever optics these guys care about. I don't know, but I'm not surprised Bell is sitting. But Brown, Roethlisberger, yeah, you kind of lose out on practicing against those guys. So out of the gate, Lions will be going up against, at the very least, who's the Steelers' backup quarterback? Is it still Gradkowski?
I think it's Landry Jones.
No, it's Landry Jones.
Landry Jones, okay.
Landry Jones and a little bit of Marcus Wheaton. No Martavis Bryant because he's also suspended. So maybe that was, I mean, that's kind of the thinking behind Antonio Brown not getting any play in the first game is because if Antonio Brown goes down, oh me, oh my, the Steelers offense would crumble.
Yeah. There's not
a whole lot of depth at wide receiver once you get past Antonio Brown.
Yeah, that's true. And at the very least, they got like guy like, for running back like D'Angelo Hall, who had some flashes of brilliance while Bell was out last year. But yeah.
D'Angelo Williams. Yeah.
D'Angelo Williams.
I said D'Angelo Williams.
You said D'Angelo Hall, cornerback.
D'Angelo Williams. God damn it, guys. Okay.
But yeah. The Lions are probably going to be sitting some guys, too. I wouldn't expect Abdullah to play. Eric Ebron's obviously not going to play.
Abdullah's not going to play. I think we can guarantee that right now. Like, he didn't take the red jersey off at all during training camp.
Right. TJ Jones, Andre Caldwell, all those guys are probably gone. So, you know, that does take a little bit of luster out of the first preseason game. But are you guys still excited at all just to kind of see the Lions out there or anything else you excited about?
Yeah, I'm excited for some actual football. I don't think we're actually going to take anything away from it though. Like last year, the offense looked great. I think it was against the Jets. Like the very first drive, Stafford was just like shredding them up, throwing it to Tate every play and touchdown.
Abdullah was tearing apart everyone.
Yeah, Abdullah, and then all of a sudden, second half of the Chargers game in the regular season, ever since then, we just looked awful. So I want to see football, but I'm not going to get too excited and actually try to take anything away from it.
Well, I think what I'm most excited about is getting a better read on where this team is going to be at in terms of their personnel after the first roster cut, because you're going to see a lot of guys get plays and a lot of guys get reps that, you know, are sitting on that proverbial bubble that we love to talk about, or that we don't like to talk about, the bubble, the Jake Gyllenhaal bubble.
The bubble.
But I think that's what I'm most excited about, is to see, you know, the Jay Lees, to see the, you know, the guys that are down on the depth chart and the defensive tackles, like the Kyrie Thorntons and the Gabe Wrights and, you know, those guys of the world. So,
yeah, you kind of want to see, like, if what you saw in training camp is going to match what you're going to see in the preseason.
It's
exciting to watch.
I just don't get hyped for preseason that much. Like, you guys talk about...
You're not a fan of the Lions, so...
Well, let me finish my sentence.
Okay.
But, I mean, again, like, this is the part where, like, I'm going to talk about how, like... Actually, I don't think there's arena football on that night, on Friday night, but there is Canadian football. But I will agree with Alex about Jay Lee. I want to see Jay Lee. I think...
Try to tell y'all.
How excited are you going to be when Jake Rudock is the one throwing in the passes?
No, he's going to... I think Jay Lee's high enough now, like he will probably be on whatever team. So he's going to get those passes from at least Orlovsky.
Yeah, that's probably
like true. I think, and you know, he was connecting really well with Orlovsky, which is like, yeah, no, it's, I mean,
that's against the first team defense too.
Yeah, no, and I mean, you can say whatever you want about that first team defense, maybe not trying that hard because it is training camp and everything, but I think Jay Lee is going to be like, you know, we had Zach Zenner and Amir Abdullah last year. I think it's going to be Jay Lee this year. People are going to learn his name really quickly. Like he's just going to haul in some ridiculous, like, 50-yard pass or something.
Yeah, he's got speed for days, man.
Yeah, there's like underlying problems to his reception. I know you were commenting, Alex, when we were at camp, like he catches the ball too much with his body, but he's still really fast. Like during camp he beat a double team of Rafael Bush and Darius Slay. So
yeah,
here's the thing though.
Stretch the field.
Here's the thing. I get being excited about Jay Lee, but even if this guy makes the team, he's not going to contribute much unless there's several injuries. So to me, he's not really one of the guys I'm that excited to look at. I'm more excited to look at these guys these new guys basically that the Lions are going to be heavily relying on this year. So like Rafael Bush is a guy I want to see in action. I want to see what's happening in the Lions backfield. I want to see if Steven Ridley really has a chance to make this roster as the number two back, or if Theo Riddick is improved at running the ball.
Dare I say his name, Zach Zenner. Like, Zach Zenner. What do we have with Zach Zenner?
If they're going to use a, if they're going to use a fullback, will Michael Burton make the team?
Yeah, I yeah, that, I mean, we saw Michael Burton used to some pretty effective counter action last year when, you know, the Cooter system got kind of put in place, but like, yeah, I don't know where he's, where he is moving forward.
And I want, I want to see if Kyle Van Noy can somehow make me impressed with him just once.
Yeah. This might be the last time we see Kyle Van Noy.
I don't know. Like, I don't know where he stands at all. It's really strange to me that he's been getting first team reps. Like, at first I wanted to think that maybe that's just them getting him his reps to see what they have, but they're so thin at linebacker that maybe this is real. Maybe he will be the team's Sam linebacker, you know, even if they only go in that, into that formation 20% of the time.
I think Kyle Van Noy kind of has to make the team by default because of the lack of depth. Like, who are you really going to keep over him? I can't really think of a single name.
Yeah, I mean, you got Bynes and Bostic, but I don't know if you really trust those guys in the same
position.
Those
are the guys. Yeah, those are the guys. Other than Tahir Whitehead, that are probably two of them are going to, or one of those guys is going to start. But for depth, I mean, I just don't know who we have.
Yeah, there's a few positions that are pretty thin in depth, and you know what? It's going to be interesting to see the offensive line kind of play out because we're still trying to figure out, like, I know we just had a big fight internally about Jeff Schwartz and all the rest, but I don't know what's going to happen with this offensive line. I really don't.
Well, we're just in kind of a wait and see pattern right now. It's definitely what most Lions fans are worried about and intrigued about, and it, for good reason. I mean, a ton of the Lions' offensive success is going to rely on that line, and we have no idea how they're going to come out and look on Friday.
I'm also going to be curious about depth at defensive end, because once you get past Ansa, I think there's some questions that need to be answered. This team went out and got Anthony Zettel during the draft, but I don't know if he's making the team. What else do we have here? Like, I'm struggling to remember names off the top of my
head. Well, Brandon Copeland, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's converted from linebacker. Is he going to, I mean, he used to play defensive end in college. We don't really know how that transition's going.
He did have a sack in the mock game.
He did.
You've got Devin Taylor, who wasn't a starter last year, even though he got over half the snaps pushed into that starting role. I don't know how that's going to work out.
Yeah. I'm just looking at defensive end. Just again, like
Gilberry.
Yeah. Gilberry here, Quantara Smith. Like, I don't, Kerry Hyder, who looked decent when he was on the field during training camp, but I don't know where depth is going to really go with that. And the other thing on my mind is, like, and again, this is me reading way too much in that simulated game, but Stafford was kind of on and off. Alex, that first possession he had, who'd he get picked off by? Darren Walls?
That's not something I would read too much into. I mean, Stafford, he made a couple bad throws in training camp. He only got picked off once. I mean, he's going to be good.
I have no illusions he's good. I just kind of got a little worried because of what I saw.
Right. I mean, I'm saying, like, I wouldn't even worry at all.
Okay.
Like, it's just nothing I would even read into at all.
But if he has a bad preseason game, you're still not reading into that?
No, preseason, still not reading into that. Okay. Let's just go to the regular season.
Well, I mean, either way, that's who the Lions have. There's no alternate solution.
I mean, not too many teams have an alternate solution heading into a season. They have one quarterback they're going to roll with, and if that doesn't work, then they have a lot of other problems into.
Right, right.
So, but you can't get overly excited if Stafford comes out and sets the world on fire like he did in preseason game one versus the Jets last year in Lombardi's offense, because look where that got them the first half of the season.
Right. There's just literally just no point in even talking about it. Like, you just wait and see.
Do you guys read anything into, like, at least the third preseason game at all?
No, I don't even read much into week one of the regular season, to be honest.
Week three is when the teams kind of start putting in their starters. But
that's when the cuts happen, too, right? You know,
right after
that, you get down to 75. So you kind of
even then, though, I still think you're going up against, like, vanilla defenses and vanilla coverages.
The only reason I bring that up is because, to me, that third preseason game last year, looking back on it, kind of had some warning signs. It was against the Jaguars, and the Jaguars' offense tore our defense
over the middle. Over the middle all day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's probably where the Chargers got the blueprint.
Right. So, I mean, that's kind of what I go back on when I think about these preseason games, is like, it's hard to draw conclusions yet. If you look back, there are occasional warning signs. It's just hard to know, like, what's real and what's not. Anything that happens in the second half of any preseason game is garbage.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the only thing that's ever real to me in any preseason game are the injuries. Like, that's the only thing I'm most concerned about. Like, to see players perform well, to see the Zach Center hype train go full steam ahead. All that stuff is just fluff to me, to be honest. It's a way to get a roster spot, because then you have a whole season of 16 games to really stake your claim, you know, to prove that you belong on like an NFL roster if you're a guy who's on the bubble. But those four preseason games, it's all about getting through healthy. Those are the only things that are real to me, because like you said, in that Jaguars game when the Lions were getting killed across the middle of the field, it was like, damn, it's going to suck to not have DeAndre Levy if he's not healthy.
Yeah, which might be a thing again this year. We don't know.
And then also, Larry Warford, he got hurt in the Redskins game. Who knows if he was even right for the rest of the season last year? And he had, by all accounts, a pretty bad season after, you know, setting the world on fire the year before that. So,
yeah, that's about right. I think we should close this up here. Last thing I want to remind people is that this roster will get cut down to 75 after preseason week three. So, I don't know.
August 30th.
Yeah, August 30th, at the end of the month. So I don't know who. I don't know if there's anyone we can say definitively is going to get cut right now. Is there anyone you guys could look to and say this guy is not making the Lions?
If he wasn't on the pup list, it'd be Corey Fuller.
The backup kicker? I don't even know his name. Devon Bell, is that right?
Devon Bell, something like that. Some of the O-line guys like Chase Ferris and Luke Marquardt are terrible.
Ferris.
Yeah, put that in, huh?
I do.
I think Jimmy Landis might get cut.
You're gonna stand for the mullback. I agree with you, because during training camp, like, how many of those snaps we saw of his go low?
Well, even in the training camps that I went to in the mock game, like just watching them snap the ball back and forth to one another. Like, Molbeck is just so much more comfortable. He has more velocity on his snaps. He doesn't put him in the dirt. Like,
yeah,
we might see a 6th-round pick get cut.
Practice squad, probably. Practice squad.
I don't want to.
You put a long snapper on the practice squad?
Can you? I don't know.
No,
that's a waste of a spot.
That's what I'm saying. It's like he's gone if you do cut him.
Unless you're converting him to tight end, because God knows the Lions need help there. But
listen, I don't want to get too deep into hashtag long snapper watch 2016. But if you're Jim Caldwell, how are you splitting their snaps in a preseason game?
Do we have a second team special teams?
I think you just go like first half, you probably just go first half, second half, right?
Yeah, probably.
Well, this is the thing. If Landis puts anything in the dirt in the preseason and he doesn't get cut, I'm going to be upset.
We riot.
We will riot.
Like, but long snapper, it's like, are you really going to learn anything new in the preseason games? It's like, you pretty much already figured it out by now during the practices.
Well, I think it goes beyond the snapping at that point. It's the blocking and it's the coverage on punt and things like that.
Well, that's the other thing too, though. In the mock game, I remember on one of the punt coverages, Molbeck was in, and he not only did he place a wonderful snap to Sam Martin, he was the first guy down there, and he made the two hand touch for the tackle.
I was going to say too, is like, I haven't seen enough of this, but I thought maybe that would be one of the things that Landis had an edge over Molbeck, because he's younger. He probably moves better, but I mean, if Ryan just saw the Moldozer carry out a nice block or whatever he said, then maybe not. I don't know.
I think we should leave it there before we get too in deep with long snapper watch. You guys want to move on to the mailbag?
Let's do it.
Yeah, I think we covered that pretty nicely.
I think we got everything together. Like, this isn't good. This doesn't matter at all, but still, we're probably going to watch it because Lions. Let's get to the mailbag. Let's do it right now. Right now, let's go. And now we're in the mailbag, Pride of Detroit mailbag. Every week, ask POD. We take your questions. We take them off of Twitter as well. So make sure when you see an ask POD to leave your comment in that post, or just send it to @PrideOfDetroit when we make the call. We usually make the call, I would say, probably about an hour or two before we start recording. But
did we get the mailbag theme in here this time?
No. Please? I'm okay. No, okay, no, fine.
Let's do it.
Fine. Let's do it right now. Thank you for your contributions, Alex.
Amazing.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Anyway, let's... oh, my God. I just read one new question that just came into the mailbag. We're going to start with what we had planned, at the very least. So, Big Al wants to know, if the Lions keep 9 offensive linemen, who are you guys... Who are the guys you take, and who goes on the practice squad?
Oh, man.
Well, we talked about... Me and Kent kind of had a long discussion about this, and...
It's one way to put it.
It basically surrounds... Well, it was friendly. It basically surrounds what you do with Jeff Schwartz, and I guess that's how I'm going to choose to answer this question. I'm not going to make a whole list of 9 guys. But the case of Jeff Schwartz, who is an interesting case. There hasn't been a lot of talk around him, but he's I think, the most proven talent on the offensive line. And while he had him at interior, you know, offensive guard, he also brings some tackle experience. So I think he's kind of an invaluable person on this squad, even though reports aren't that high on him. And it might end up getting a guy like Joe Dahl, a 5th round pick, cut and trying to stash him on the practice squad. I don't know if he'll make it or not, but I think, to me, I would rather have Jeff Schwartz for a year than Joe Dahl waiting in the wings.
Well, we got another question from Twitter. This is kind of related to this, and I might as well throw this out here. While we're talking about it, Austin Daniel wants to ask, is Tomlinson making any progress or still the weakest link along the line is Swanson?
Well, I think Jeremy touched on that earlier when he said Meinke said that he was the one offensive lineman that was kind of struggling in the joint practice with the Steelers.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Going back to the original question, I think I agree with Jeremy and just that I think Schwartz has to be one of those 9 guys that makes the team just because of his, you know, like we've talked about a bunch of times on this podcast, the versatility among the offensive linemen, the ability to play, you know, inside and outside. And I just know that if they do take 9 guys, if you're having struggles with Tomlinson, are you going to go into the season with your insurance being a rookie 5th round guard, or are you going to go into the season with Schwartz being there?
Right.
Yeah. I agree. And I think Joe Dahl down the road is going to also be a guy that's going to bring some versatility because he also played guard and tackle in college. But I just don't think he's there yet. And I think that Schwartz definitely, if we want somebody right now, can bring something.
Right. And the second part of this question really is also, do you want that versatility swing role that Schwartz brings, or would you rather have a 4th offensive tackle? Because in most situations in which Jeff Schwartz makes a team, and maybe Joe Dahl does too, that means you're basically going into the season with Reef, Decker, and Ola as your 3 offensive tackles that solely play offensive tackle. So are you willing to go into the season with Jeff Schwartz as kind of that second backup at tackle, even though he's only been taking reps at guard?
It's tricky.
No, I think you got to cut one of those guys and probably Dahl, keep him on the practice squad, and then keep another guy like Lucas or...
Well, I was going to say, the problem with trying to put Joe Dahl on the practice squad is that he has to clear waivers. And I know Kent has talked about how there's going to be a team that's ready to snipe him off of waivers if the Lions try to put him on the practice squad. I mean, maybe that's all pure speculation. I mean, would teams who scouted him heavily, maybe who wanted him in the 5th round and the Lions got to him before they did, it could happen. But I guess kind of thinking now, I mean, I don't give a shit about Cornelius Lucas. I mean, why not just cut him?
All right.
I thought he's been looking better. I don't know.
Is this Cornelius Lucas's last game with Calvin Johnson?
Nice callback. This has been too serious, so I'm going to throw a curveball in here. Tim Blason wants to ask, With the addition of Bolden to the Lions, do you think Jon Snow and the Mother of Dragons will get together next season?
Yeah. Yep. I do.
Alex Reno is our Game of Thrones correspondent. Okay.
That's all you're going to give us?
it's pretty...
I don't want to spoil anything for the people who are listening and don't know...
what we're talking about.
Like me.
I could potentially give out some spoilers right now. I don't want to do that.
Just leave it there. I don't care about Game of Thrones. We just have to have it in because I think we're the last media publication out there to not do any content related to Game of Thrones on whatever we're talking about. So, check mark.
If you want to send us TV-related questions, they need to be related to the best show on television, Mr. Robot.
Or wrestling.
That too.
You kind of touched on Mr. Robot sort of earlier when we were talking about what's real and what's not real.
Ooh. Mm.
All right, back to the football questions. GV42 wants to know, is Tom Brady the best to ever do it, despite his team's reputation?
Dude, so what about episode 4 of Robot?
Oh, my God.
So good.
What about Tom Brady?
The best to ever do it. I don't know. What is it?
Play a quarterback.
Giselle Bundchen?
Sell Ugg boots. Two men. Yes, he's the best to ever do that.
I don't want to talk about if he's the best or quarterback.
I love Tom Brady.
He's the best at... He's the best at just keeping things in constant litigation and spending the American taxpayers' dollars on a stupid, absurd thing.
He's the best at not being counted out.
Never count him out.
Never count out touchdown Tom. Next question.
Teflon Tom. Teflon ain't nothing Tom. Stick.
Joseph R. Sweeney 5 wants to know, how disappointed was everyone with the cancellation of the Hall of Fame game?
Very. I wanted to watch some football, man.
There was Olympics on. I didn't care.
I couldn't believe because when I first saw anything about it, Jeremy posted something in the Slack room, and I thought it was so funny that they just use an advertisement that they use to like promote the game time. They like use like the same image of like the two quarterbacks and like the two like top wide receiver weapons, and then like two of the top defensive talents, and then it was just at the top.
Canceled.
And like, are you ready for some football? Well, it's fucking not happening.
Oh my God.
I was a little upset just because, you know, I was getting hyped for the start of the season a little bit. And it's kind of a yearly tradition to at least watch the first two quarters of that game and be like, hey, it's kind of football right now that I'm watching. That's cool.
I am sad we didn't get to talk about Brett Favre.
That is exactly what I didn't miss.
I want to talk about his dick pics.
Okay. This is about the time of the podcast that I boot up Overwatch.
I can't believe. You better not, because this next question is really good. Brendan Buffa wants to ask, who played the best Joker out of everyone, including Mark Hamill?
That question's just going to make this podcast run for like 3 hours.
No, we're not going to get in deep. I already put in my thoughts about Suicide Squad, and I'm already revising a few of them. But
it's definitely not Jared Leto.
No, Jared Leto, like, he wasn't even I think I brought this up on some other when I was talking to another friend. He wasn't even on screen long enough to you. Like, there was no scene of Jared Leto to give the impression that, like, this is actually like a menacing figure or just a twisted figure. Like, what was it? Like, I would say the longest scene we even got to see with him was like him sitting in like a circle of knives.
Spoiler alert.
This isn't a spoiler. It's a scene out of context. I hate people so sensitive about these spoilers. Yeah, no, that's it. He's like sitting in a circle of knives. It's completely out of context. It's not a spoiler, but that is it for just how crazy Jared Leto is or is not. So his Joker, completely forgettable.
So that's not your answer?
No. Actually, I know the shoe-in here is probably Heath Ledger. But I'm going to go with Jack Nicholson.
And you say that and you have a smirk on your face, so I feel like you're just being a contrarian.
No, I'm not. I like Jack. We talked about this in the Slack. I like Jack Nicholson enough. There is a bombast and a flamboyance to his Joker that is just lacking from Heath Ledger.
He was fun, but I think the only correct answer is Heath Ledger.
Well, why? See?
To me, the reason I liked Ledger's, I mean, I'm not an expert. I haven't seen Suicide Squad. I won't see Suicide Squad.
Don't worry. Leto doesn't enter this conversation at all.
Jeremy doesn't watch superhero films the way that Chris doesn't care about the Lions.
And Mark Hamill, is that Is that he did the voice?
The animated, like, the animated series, the cartoon. Okay. Yeah.
But I like Ledger's performance just because it didn't have that cartoonish aspect to it. And I know maybe, you know, hardcore comic book guys think that Joker needs that kind of flamboyant, you know, lightheartedness to it. But to me, like, seeing Ledger do, like, it seemed like he had, like, a legitimate kind of realistic mental health problem. And that, to me, was kind of interesting.
Well, I don't know if I would say the flamboyance of Nicholson was lighthearted, but it was just, it was, I don't know, you'd have to, it's that Tim Burton twisted flamboyance mixed with what Jack Nicholson is as an actor. Like, just, I just thought it was, yeah, like Heath Ledger, definitely, like, he lived in an age, he made the movie in an age where you could get away with that kind of ultra violence that maybe Tim Burton right. couldn't do with Batman when it came out in, what, 1989? Right. But, like, yeah.
He literally looked like a caricature. Literally looked like one.
What, Nicholson?
Yeah.
I mean,
he did.
It's 89. It's 89. Like, you, that's the best you can probably do with makeup at that point.
Sure.
Like,
well, yeah. Well, so if I could interject, I think that, like, with the 89 Batman, with, you know, the Tim Burton Batman, I think even, like, Nicholson's performance taken into context, like, I think that was decidedly pretty dark for 89.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that was without a doubt, like, the darkest superhero film. That was, it's like always, I mean, that's kind of always, you know, revered to be the first superhero film that finally took comics seriously.
Yeah, like Burton.
And it wasn't Christopher Reeves flying around on in front of, like, a green screen and all that nonsense.
Yeah,
so
Tim Burton, like, how he cast Michael Keaton as Batman, he portrayed it as basically Batman had, like, a split, like, a schizophrenia or a split personality disorder or something. Like, he had a mental problem.
Well, and then I would say that not, you know, I would say that Returns in 92 is darker
yes.
than any superhero
oh, God,
movie that
yes.
I've ever seen. I mean, Danny DeVito is downright frightening in that film, but
yeah, that was a creepy
one. He made
an
excellent Penguin.
I don't know. I think I don't want to be a jerk and say that it's a draw, because there's definitely, like, there's elements to what made Nicholson's character so effective. And then there's also, I think maybe people kind of, They think that Ledger's interpretation was just so very, like, psychological driven and so very dark. But I think he doesn't get enough credit for, like, kind of, like, playing up the, I don't want to say the campiness, because, I mean, think about, like, the hospital scene when he's dressed up in, like, the nurse's outfit.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's running out there with yeah. the, you know, with the nurses, detonator yeah. to set off the bomb and stuff. I mean,
I think
there's definitely some elements of his character that was kind of a little campy, but then again, it couldn't be too campy because it's set in this ultra realistic universe where Nolan was like, yep, Batman exists.
I think what Ledger really got right more than anything was Joker's obsession with Batman. Like, that's always been a driving force of the Joker character, is that this guy is obsessed with Batman. He sees himself in Batman. I think Ledger got that right in a way that even I think Nicholson probably didn't have in there. But granted, Nicholson was also built in this Burton universe that was, like, completely different from the comics too.
Yeah, I think that you can't hold Nicholson's portrayal of the Joker, I don't think you can hold it up in the same light as Ledger's, because Nicholson, with whatever, you know, the screenplay that he had to work with, Tim Burton admittedly, like, read, like, one comic before he filmed Batman 89. He read The Killing Joke and that was yeah. it.
Also, Nicholson had the Prince soundtrack to help him out.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so Nicholson wins.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds. Lawrence?
All All right, we're almost near the end of this mailbag. Do we have any more Lions questions? It's a pretty light mailbag this week, but I think we're almost about done. Oh, I like this one. Big haircut, over under 1,000 yards from Zach Zenner in the preseason.
Whew, gotta take the over, absolutely.
Yeah, all over.
I mean, are we talking... Actually, it doesn't matter if we're talking rushing or receiving. Over for both.
Yeah. We're being ironic here, people.
No, we're not.
So as a serious question, though, would Zach Zenner make the team?
I don't know, man. I really
this
don't
team,
know.
This team is, the team's going to keep three running backs.
I think it's Ridley over Zenner.
Is it?
Wait, yeah, three?
No, it's going to keep four, I think.
Four.
I mean, they had four last year.
I made my own list of 53, and you can't keep four running backs. It depends on whether or not you keep Burtner, though. Do you keep Burton and Tim Burton? Do you keep Tim Burton?
I would keep Tim Burton.
Yeah, release Michael.
I mean,
actually, Tim Burton's past his prime now. He's just making weird movies. But go on, Michael Burton.
I went through and I my own 53 man projection, and
yeah,
when it came down to cutting like the nitty gritty, I was like, this team is only going to have three running backs and a fullback if it keeps Burton.
I just don't agree. I put the 53-man roster prediction out after OTAs. Not only did I have four wide receivers or four running backs and a fullback, but that had me keeping three quarterbacks as well, which I'm not going to do in my next roster prediction. I think they keep Theo Riddick. I think they keep Zach Zenner. I think they keep Amir Abdullah, and I think they keep Stephen Ridley. I think George Wynn is the odd man out.
But then does that relegate Zenner to special teams duties then or something? Because that's what George Wynn, you're basically saying he's going to be
right.
George Wynn's yeah. role.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I just want to make sure.
You'd keep Zenner and Ridley.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Who are both going to do pretty much the same thing.
Well, one is going to do it predominantly. The other one's going to back him up.
Yeah. And I think it's sort of a misconception with Zenner is that he's only a power back. I think he actually is a little bit more than that, and he has great vision, and maybe he doesn't move as well as like Amir Abdullah, but he is sort of shifty and fast.
If it came down to keeping 10 offensive linemen or four running backs, which would you do?
I just don't think we're going to keep 10 offensive linemen. I don't know. Like Caldwell, hasn't it been the 2 years that Caldwell's been here, he's kept four running backs and nine offensive linemen.
That was with Martin Mayhew, though.
Yes.
It'll be different. But to me, it's four running backs because you have a guy like Theo Riddick who's going to act more as a wide receiver.
I think it makes more sense in this day and age, too. Like, if you're running back by committee, you should probably take four just because of you're doing committee. And yet, if you are doing committee, an injury can probably be more costly. Because like it's not that it takes away that depth, but in the case of the Lions, like you have a specialized role guy like Theo Riddick. So if like Riddick's healthy, but then like Amir Abdullah goes down, like yeah, you are going to need some just standard running back depth there. So it makes sense to keep four.
Okay.
All right. Last question here. This is from Mr. Zebra.
Hello, Mr. Zebra.
Who is your favorite Lions beat writer and why? No one wants to take this.
I guess I'll
this
take
is
it.
Tricky. This is tricky. We don't want to offend our beat writers.
Right. No, I don't. And there's a lot of great work that a lot of guys do. I really like the work that they do over at MLive, even, you know, Detroit News, Detroit Free Press. They're all good. But there is one guy that like I don't want to put anyone on blast, but there's one guy that really, really makes me mad. And his name is John C. So. That was the first time we've ever ranted for 30 minutes about Lions football before the podcast. We're going to be worn out.
But it's about things we can't publish because they're about the writers.
True.
By the way, I'm recording.
I was telling Ryan and Alex, I really want a supercut at the end of the season of just you in the background yelling at your cat.